John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show, CBS Audio Network. I welcome my colleagues, Thaddeus McCotter, American Greatness, Malcolm Honlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. We begin with the threat. That is the threat. It's only one country. Go ahead.
Well, Malcolm, it appears the Iranian regime once again senses an American administration that is desperate for a nuclear deal, and they're acting like it, aren't they?
Yes, according to the latest reports, first of all, good evening to both of you, but the latest reports, one is that Israel's special diplomatic security cabinet is meeting today, which, while the government's in formation, is an unusual move. But we also see a lot of statements coming from the Iranians who are claiming, and especially Araghchi, who was the chief negotiator from Iran, said that that while serious disagreements remain, a new understanding appears to be emerging in the talks held in Vienna about the JCPOA, and explained that the Iranians have submitted a new text on the nuclear issue and about lifting U.S. sanctions. And we know that their timetable is not the same as what the United States was seeking. And it seems that China said that everyone has agreed to accelerate work on the issues, including the sanctions the United States would lift. So we see increasing pressure despite the recent events. And, you know, that the United States asked Israel to stop commenting on Iran because they're afraid that they said they feel uneasy regarding the linkage of Israel to what happened in Natanz and had some terms of that it was dangerous, whatever. But the Iranians, in the meantime, are saying we are going on to enrich at 60%. And here's you know, not a big technical achievement. Enriching uranium to 60% from the level of 20%, which was the highest yet, it will take place at the small facility at Fordo, where you have 1,000 IR6 centrifuges. At the same time, they're saying that they're going to be able to use parts of Natanz that were not destroyed for a separate enrichment site. So they are moving ahead all the time, advancing the breakout timing, the threat of the breakout timing, and they hope to produce pressure on the United States, although many people, including I, do not believe that it's really so clear that they can break out very quickly and that the time will shrink with the more advanced centrifuges that they're using. But they're trying to build pressure on the Biden administration and to try to face safe domestically, where they are very embarrassed by the series of attacks. And there's no doubt that they've been set back. Whether it's 2 months or 9 months is a subject of speculation. But they're talking about a major expansion of the Natanz fuel enrichment plant. Most likely everything will be built more and more underground. But this process has been underway since November of 20 and expanding their capacity at these various facilities. And while it sounds very technical, it isn't at all. The threshold that is known as significant quantity, which is called SQ of Iranian, enriched at a given level. And they're still short of the 155 kilograms of 20% enriched, which they need to get to enough 90% enriched uranium through the process. So we're seeing, on the one hand, the Iranians trying to move ahead. They were definitely hurt by this significant event at Natanz. They will try to cover it and avoid as much embarrassment as possible. And we'll see whether in Vienna the administration will maintain the hard stance that they have talked about to get Iran to the table and to make the concessions necessary.
Quickly, Malcolm, where are the Europeans in this?
On the sidelines, expressed horror at the attack, but a great fear about the 60% enrichment. They see that as a real danger to them.
We go to Lebanon. We go to Lebanon. There's too many villains, Malcolm. We have to rush to Lebanon. This is Reuters. Lebanon's Hezbollah has made preparations for an all-out collapse of the state, issuing ration cards for food, importing medicine, readying storage for fuel from its patron, Iran. This is sources familiar with the plans tell Reuters. What's going on, Malcolm? All-out collapse. What is that?
That is exactly what they're planning on, and this would be a complete takeover. And they're using really disturbing means to achieve this end. And one of them is food, which means that when Lebanese shop at Hezbollah markets, they can buy from other Iran-occupied countries, that Lebanon, Yemen, others, Iraq. And the more that Lebanon falls apart, the greater Hezbollah becomes. And what they're doing is they're giving out cards for people to be able to shop there. But they, by that, they have to affiliate with Hezbollah. Other Islamic groups have used to fuel as a food as a weapon. Remember, pro-Turkey groups had warehouses near Kilis during the Syrian civil war. Food was used as a weapon in Somalia and other places. But here we're seeing that people can only get sugar, cooking oil, other basic products if they have this this card. And it is said that they're maintaining stability in Shiite areas, but they're in fact using food as a weapon. And this is, I think, a great concern, should be of concern to everyone, that people will not be able to get food unless they affiliate with Hezbollah. And the militia groups will then have greater and greater power, those affiliated with Hezbollah, and put the Lebanon's future more and more in doubt.
To what end, Malcolm? Why now? What they're preparing? They're strong-arming the whole country. Where are they going with this? What do they want?
They want to take over the government, and they want to take over, taking it over from the bottom up. By this maneuver, they've done it on a political level. We know that they are essentially in control of the government. The government is in collapse. The president is trying to cobble together a government, has not been able to do so. And you know that they've suffered some military setbacks as well. But they have done, they even undertook projects like providing drinking water for parts of Lebanon, claiming that this was part of the resistance against Israel. So they are using every means to try and assert there, as the Lebanese economy is in collapse, and they get whatever assistance they get from Iran. But most of all, they are able to exploit their situation on the ground to gain control.
Okay. That is, we need some good news. Have you got any?
Yes, Malcolm, there may be too many villains, but there is good news regarding Greece, Cyprus, and Israel.
Absolutely. There was a remarkable meeting of Israel, Greece, and Cyprus with the UAE's participants. Foreign ministers of all the four countries got together and saying that they will expand their cooperation in energy, fighting COVID, and changing the face of the region at the same time that we see others who are trying to expand the conflicts in the region. And this cooperation, somebody called it a web of regional cooperation, is creating a whole new narrative that the Cypriot foreign minister said when he opening, and it's really true. When you see the level of cooperation, they signed, Greece and Israel signed a very expansive mutual defense agreement. There are agreements being signed by each of them, and they're looking for ways to enhance joint action in facing the pandemic's impact, medical research, positive areas, not just military and security areas.
Malcolm, the puzzle here is this is Greece, Cyprus, and Israel. There are other players in the Eastern Mediterranean. I'd like to checklist here. Egypt, is it interested in a similar alliance?
Parallel. But yes, I've spoken to Sisi about it. He definitely, and he sees himself as part of this. This particular arrangement has been long in the making between the three countries, Israel, Greece, and Cyprus. UAE's presence there, I think, enhances that. And it's what Sisi envisaged long ago, as he expressed it to me, that he would bring the Gulf along and have the combined Gulf-Mediterranean initiative, which could be really changing the world.
Now, French warships have tangled with Turkish warships. Italy is part of this. Is that possible? You could expand this to the West, Malcolm.
100%. Spain, Morocco now would be in it. I think if Tunisia goes through some changes, they would certainly be a candidate. But Malta wants to be in. Even non-Mediterranean states like Bulgaria and Romania have expressed interest, as has Turkey. But obviously, they have yet to earn a place at the table.
All right, back to the rascals. Okay, Malcolm, you named it. And Mr. Erdogan. Now what's he up to? He's like the bad boy in the seventh grade, Malcolm.
I think it's much worse than the bad boy in the seventh grade as it goes. We just saw a study, by the way, that came out of Turkish textbooks, and the Henry Jackson Society and Impact did a very extensive study, and they find that the demonization of Israel and blatant anti-Semitism have been weaponized in Erdogan's attempt to Islamicize the Turkish society. And he goes back to the era of, Ottoman Empire in the text. But he did lash out in a speech in the last 24 hours. He blasted the Israeli government, and he said that it is an enemy of Islam because of not because of what happened in Iran, which I think he actually privately is happy about, but because Israel struck back at facilities in Hamas, operated by Hamas in Gaza, from which they've been firing missiles at civilian communities inside Israel. And there were two rockets, I think, on Thursday or Friday, and two more a few days before. And this is weapons manufacturing and smuggling sites that Israel hit very targeted. No reports of civilian casualties. And yet he used this as an opportunity to lash out. And he said that we know Israel's an enemy of Islam and Israel doesn't change its habits. We want all humanity to follow Israel's hostility, et cetera. And has used this as an opportunity at a time when he was supposedly reaching out and trying to better relations. We see clearly his true intent, and it is very disturbing that Turkey continues to move in this direction. It's not Turkey, it's Erdogan.
The United Nations Relief and Rehabilitation Administration, shorthand UNRWA, was formed in 1943 with a utopian vision. Today, Malcolm, it's synonymous with bad acting by the Palestinians, all 750 billion of them. Now, Malcolm, what have you got fresh on UNRWA? We've already identified it as darkness visible. What else?
Well, they heard your criticism, and the administration put out a statement that right after the U.S. has resumed funding the UN agency, which many in Congress are unhappy about. And it said that UNRWA has committed to zero tolerance for anti-Semitism, racism, or discrimination. They don't deny anymore that their textbooks and that the other activities that UNRWA was involved with financing. They said they made clear their rock solid commitments to the U.S. on issues of transparency, accountability, and neutrality of its operations and zero tolerance for racism and anti-Semitism. But for years, we know that they've been mismanaged. The money has been wasted. The money was going to support terrorist operations. They continue to treat the millions of Palestinians as refugees, even though they have a Palestinian Authority now, that the estimates range from 20,000 to close to 200,000 people are actually refugees. Yet there are more than 30,000 employees of UNRWA who are involved in this. And it's seen by many as more of an obstacle to peace, because they continue to perpetuate the idea of the right of return and other notions, which everyone knows is not going to be feasible. And they do so under the cover of providing social services, when in fact we know that the money has rarely ended up serving the purposes for which it was intended, which is why there's so much criticism that UNRWA became a cover for a lot of the hostility and education for hatred.
On to the Arabian Peninsula. Thaddeus?
Malcolm, what do we need to know about Yemen?
So there were more attacks, and it's not getting very much publicity, but there were fresh attacks on targets deep in Saudi Arabia, and they continued to publicly pronounce it. The chief of the Yemeni armed forces said that 17 drones and ballistic missiles were used in operation against Saudi Arabia. Last week, they hit Aramco refineries in Jubail and Jeddah. We know that the Jeddah airport was closed and was announced on international aviation news, and they were directing flights to other airports. That they said sensitive military targets in Saudi cities of Khamis Mushait and Jizan were hit with UAVs as well as two ballistic missiles. So they are escalating the aggression against Saudi Arabia, which comes under criticism for its role there. But people we don't see the kind of response to what they're doing. And Iran is expanding the Houthis' military capacity in Sana'a and Sa'ada that for drone engines and guidance systems, liquid or solid fuel components, all sorts of other things, together with domestically available military items. So that means that there will continue to be an escalation. They don't want to see Iran doesn't want to see Saudi Arabia off the hook. They want them tied down in Yemen and build international anger and opposition to Saudi Arabia there.
Malcolm Holine, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organization, Thaddeus McCotter, American Greatness. We're off to find Indiana Holine himself. I'm John Batchelor.